Good morning, everybody. Not all.
Good morning.
I normally come here and know everybody, and I realise I don't today. So I'm Rob Pearce. I live in Leamington Spa, which is just about an hour's drive from here. I'm an elder in the Seventh-day Adventist Church there in Leamington Spa. We call ourselves The Mission. Many of you have visited, some of you have even been baptised there. And we bring greetings, we bring warmth from our church to you. We share the same pastor now. So we're, I think, what is now called sister churches. We were, then we weren't, now we are again. So it's quite unusual, actually, to get a pastor back, isn't it? So this time last week, the sun was shining. The sea was lapping on the stony beach. The view from my balcony onto the open air swimming pool was idyllic. The temperature was about 20 degrees. And I thought, I'm quite glad I've come here. I was on the Adriatic in Montenegro, almost opposite the heel of Italy. So just on the other side of the sea. In fact, I think if we'd had long enough sight, we could have seen Italy. I don't think that bit is very wide. I haven't found it out. It's about that. Why was I there? I was there with the leaders of the Seventh-day Adventist Church from across Europe. There were 140 people there, and they had gathered for the week, and I went more towards the weekend because I was only just going for one committee. But I had a little bit of other work to do, so I went a little bit earlier. Interesting you should mention leadership, because these are humble men and women, surprising number of women, there is a mix, who are dedicated to the work of God. Some of them are preachers, some of them are apostles, some of them are preachers, some of them are teachers, some of them are accountants, some of them are business development workers, some of them are administrators and PAs and all that kind of thing. And they gather together twice a year, once in St. Albans and then once in Montenegro. And it's like any professional conference. They have presenters and then they have speakers. And the Sabbath is very special. So this time last week I was there and started singing and in the group, and then the next worship, somebody said, "You should be up the front singing." So I went up the front and sang with a group of four people. And then the next worship, "You should be worship leading." So I ended up worship leading. And we did some great stuff. We did, the only thing is, it's the only ever church service I've been through in a long time where there wasn't any clapping, because I'm used to being clapping in church. But there were very hearty amens. So that'll do. Well, what were they talking about? They were talking in the week about keeping people in church. Well, the technical word, retention. I always find that word slightly difficult, because if you work in healthcare like I do, retention means something else. But they were talking about retention. And my work this week, I've been working with a group of people in London that run a domiciliary care agency. One of the biggest problems in London is getting workers. Goodness knows what they're going to do after Brexit, but anyway. The real problem, if you work in hospitality, if you work in social care, if you work in health, all sorts of things, your workforce in London is, well, there's hardly anybody who is lived in England for more than about 5 years, I think. But anyway. And their biggest problem is that they don't have enough workers. And so there's an HR person, so we set them a target of recruiting 22 people. That's part-timers and full-timers. And so she's been working away, doing a good job, and the situation wasn't really changing. So my colleague said to me yesterday, Thursday morning we were talking about it, my colleague said to me, "Hang on a minute, Rob. We've missed a trick here. How many people are leaving?" So I got the email yesterday morning. Total for the year is minus one. So all the effort that this lady called Sian, significant effort, significant investment,
advertising all sorts of things, interviews, DBS checks, all sorts of things have gone through, and they're actually at minus one. So they've got one less person on the payroll than they did at the beginning. And I thought, oh, that's interesting, because in the conference in Montenegro, they were talking about keeping people in church. Now, sometimes I talk about evangelism, and I'm not saying evangelism isn't right, but it was just interesting that they were talking about keeping people in church. And so I asked a couple of people about, because I wasn't there for the Monday and the Tuesday when they had those presentations, so I asked them what the key issues were. Three key reasons why people don't attend church when they have been attending church. Okay, so these are not people that have never attended. People that have been part of a church community and leave. What's the number one reason people leave?
Fall out with somebody.
Sorry?
They fall out with somebody.
That's number two.
They die.
No. Right, they're still alive. Number two is that you fall out with somebody.
Yeah. They don't agree with.
What's number one?
They don't agree with something.
No, that's way down the list. Doctrinal or belief differences is right down the list. Much further than I thought.
Don't like the minister?
No.
Not that one.
People aren't very... Well, it's interesting because it's kind of like that. It's actually hypocrisy. The number one reason why people don't attend church anymore or leave a church community is because of hypocrisy. And the one that I thought would be right up there, disagreement of beliefs or challenge or intellectual challenge, that's right down the list. And number three was that it didn't meet their needs, which I thought was a little bit selfish, but then that's a little bit about individualism, it's a bit about our modern society. So one was hypocrisy, two was fall out with somebody, or I think they called it conflict, I think, yeah. Number two. And number three was what did I say? Number three? Didn't meet my needs. That's why I have notes. So I thought, did it happen when you get over 60? Is that what happens?
No, I was going to go over 50.
Get worse.
Oh, did it get worse? Oh, thanks. Great, that's good. So I thought to myself, well, where am I going to preach next week? And I thought, oh yes, Kidderminster Fellowship. Now you've always called yourself Kidderminster Fellowship. Yeah. And when one comes here, that's what one gets. One gets fellowship. And I just thought to myself, yes, where do we find about fellowship in the Bible? What does it mean? What does it mean to me? I love the fellowship in my church. I love coming here. So far, I've been asked to come back. Today I'm not. I'll understand the reasons why. So Philippians 2 and verse 1. So we're going to look at Philippians 2, and we'll just look at 11 verses in Philippians, just as a context for what we're talking about. So Philippians 2 and verse 1. I always remember as a little boy when I was told to go up, asked to go up the front and read the Bible, always wait for people to find the text. Philippians 2 and verse 1. Is there any encouragement from belonging to Christ? Any comfort from his love? Any fellowship together in the Spirit? Are your hearts tender and compassionate? They'll make you truly happy by agreeing wholeheartedly with each other, loving one another, and working together with one mind and purpose. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others is better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. You must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privilege. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. When he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. Therefore, God elevated him to the highest honour and gave him the name above all other names, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. Verse 2 stands out to me. When I used to take exams, and that was quite a few years ago now, I used to underline or highlight key words in the question. Because one of the biggest problems in the stress of an exam room is that you misread the question. Verses 1 and 2 are the key texts here. Is there any encouragement from belonging to Christ? Any comfort from his love? Any fellowship together in the Spirit? Are your hearts tender and compassionate? Then make me truly happy by agreeing wholeheartedly with each other, loving one another, and working together with one mind and purpose. There'll be a number of translations around. Anybody got anything different at the beginning of verse 1, where it says, is there any encouragement from belonging to Christ? Anybody got any different words there? No? You all got roughly the same
just type of the last word says, are your hearts tender and sympathetic?
Are your hearts so sympathetic rather than compassionate? Yeah. So there's just some interesting words around here. We know these words. We know what they mean. The problem is we find it really difficult, don't we? This kind of stuff, it's the soft stuff. It's actually easier in life probably to have a belief than it is sometimes to live your life like this.
Yes.
The black and white stuff is sometimes easier. This is the difficult stuff. And it's stuff that we mustn't ignore, because we hurt each other and we sometimes don't even realise it. Our attitudes are really quite important. And having the attitude of Christ, and as it said in the text, the attitude that Christ was prepared to come to earth and give him his life and die as a criminal. He took all the steps of humility that we should do. What should we be concerned about our attitudes? Well, there's our attitude towards God. There's our attitude towards ourselves as an individual. There's our attitude towards our brothers and sisters. And there's their attitude towards our fellow church group. Basically, I think when we're talking in this context, I think the motivating attitude that we should have towards God is an attitude of thankfulness, an attitude of gratitude. That will then motivate us. If we are truly grateful for what God has done for us, we had a wonderful testimony. That prayer time, it wasn't anything about us making prayer requests, it was about Richard giving a testimony. I sat there and I thought, oh, Richard's giving us a testimony. He was thanking God. He was showing an attitude of gratitude to God for what God has done in his life. And he was saying, what I heard him say was, why did it take me so long to find out? Actually, I'd have been better off if I found it out sooner. You know, gratitude is a wonderful motivator. There's nothing worse than doing something for somebody, giving somebody a present, and they don't show gratitude. How do you feel? You almost feel like asking for it back sometimes, don't you? Well, if that's how you feel, you can give it back, and I'll give it. In fact, I've heard this phrase, well, if that's how you feel, I'll have it back, and I'll give it to somebody that's more thankful. Ever heard that? Mm-hmm. Ever had it said to you? God doesn't need our gratitude. God is God. We need to be thankful. It's for our benefit. I'm sounding awfully paternal, aren't I? But, you know, that's the kind of things you say to your children as they're growing up. It's actually good for you to be thankful. No, it isn't. But yes, it is. But no, it's good for us to be thankful. That's what Paul's talking about here in this book. It's about showing gratitude, being thankful. I was sad to hear about that. She's called Beth.
Yes.
And so many, particularly young people, but it seems to affect all sorts of people, about what attitudes we have to ourselves. And actually, Christianity teaches you, a belief in Jesus Christ teaches you to value yourself. You're not being proud. It's not wrong. You value yourself because, why do you value yourself? You value yourself because you are a child of God. And you are loved. And you are grateful for that love. And so the outpouring of that love in you is you are proud to be who you are. And it's not wrong. You're proud to be a child of God. However, you are also humble as a child of God. So it's really weird, because we see pride and humility as being opposites, don't we? But in this context, you're proud to be humble, if you like. You've got a genuine pride that is demonstrated in humility. The other thing, so you're humble as yourself, but the other thing that you are is that you're teachable. You're open to learning. Richard must find his most difficult classes in school where he has children in those classes that are not prepared to learn. Most of them, yeah. And you're not even allowed to give them a good slapping now. I had a very sobering experience yesterday morning. I'm a governor at a local high school, and I was asked to sit on an exclusion panel. What a terrible, sad, sad story. Sadness all round. No wonder this kid didn't want to learn. He had no self-worth, he had no framework, he had no life. Pillar and post, not even living with somebody that really bothered about him. And you wonder why he's not open to learning. Well, as Christians, because we're loved by the Lord, because we've got pride in our faith, we are open to learning. We want to learn, we are thirsty for learning. And that's not necessarily academic learning. One of the biggest mistakes we've made in our society, and it's UK that's got it wrong, I don't think the rest of Europe has. The UK has promoted academic learning way above everything else, what we call vocational learning. When I first went to Germany 40 years ago, Germans would revere an engineer the same as they would a medical doctor. And the sooner we get back to that level, the better. This isn't about academic. This is about practical, day-to-day Christianity. And that will then lead to being honest that we make mistakes. I've been a church elder for, must be 25 years now, and I can tell you I've made more than 25 mistakes. So, what's the attitude towards us? If we are grateful to God, what's our attitude towards ourselves? Humility, being willing to learn, and honesty about our failures. That kind of honesty leads us to be more motivated to get things right. It's not like we were talking about people that haven't got things quite sorted out and use that kind of honesty to beat themselves up. It's not about beating yourself up. It's about learning. And then I just want to pick up two or three ways then. Once we are in that relationship with God, once we are confident within ourselves and with our faith, there is then a series of ways in which we then interact with each other. We have an attitude of love to each other. It might be weird that people in churches are called brothers and sisters. I don't call Steve Brother Steve, but we're brothers. That's because we're all together. We love each other. We look after each other. Over the years, people have said, well, why are you bothering to do this for me? Well, you're in the church. It's what we do. We love each other. We look after each other. We cooperate together. How many of us have been team leaders in lives or part of teams? And you achieve so much more if there's a level of cooperation. Have I said it myself? Can we have some cooperation here? Yes, I have. Have I been in a group of people where somebody has said to me, can we have a degree of cooperation here? Yes, I have. We need to cooperate together. We need to give appreciation for others and for their work. Thank you to whoever made me a slice of toast this morning.
That's just a mean joke between Emily and me, don't worry.
That's why she's laughing as much as she is.
But it is about showing, it's just about showing gratitude. It's just about cooperating together and offering appreciation for people to do. People don't know how hard it is to stand up here week in, week out, prepare songs and lead out. People think, oh, well, you might do that because you like singing. No, it's hard work. It's hard work. You've got to think about it, you've got to prepare it, you've got to get the right song. You've actually got to pray about it because you've got to get something that's going to lead the people in worship. That was some of the feedback I got from last Saturday night from the Vespers in Montenegro. Oh, you led us in worship. As if that was something that they had never experienced before.
It was mainly because we sang Bless the Lord, O My Soul, and that's one of the best worship songs around.
We need to be submissive to each other. There's a guy who joined our church, many of you know him, Andy. He joined our church, I don't know how time goes by, 10 years ago, 8 years ago? 8, 10 years ago. And if we were in the workplace in my last job, I would have been at the top of the tree and he would have been about a third up the tree. And he keeps saying to me so often, he said, do you know, I'm just astounded that when we're in church together, we're all on the level. There's no hierarchy. I said, well, no, there isn't. We're all the same in God's eyes. And sometimes we puff ourselves up, don't we? We try and be something, you know. And it is such a false statement to make in church that you are any more important than anybody else or any less important than anybody. We are all the same. This is why I'm so motivated by Am about this wider discussion around the role of women in church. So I just see us as the same. We've got different skill sets. I'm not saying we're identical. We are the same. We submit to each other. We live in peace with each other. Christians are hospitable. One of the things about travelling around the world as a Seventh-day Adventist, as I'm sure is the case of other Christians, is that you can go into any church in the world and people will look after you. Christians are hospitable. If I don't finish this sermon quite soon, you're going to speak to me about coming between you and your hospitality, which is your lunch. We're warmed, we're friendly, we're open. I was really impressed last weekend. I was with a guy called Dr. Daniel Doodah. I don't know if you know. He's never heard it before, Doodah, Doodah Day, but anyway, we won't say that again. So Daniel is a most amazing man. He's the most humble man, and yet he's probably the man I know, the man with the best brain that I know. He's just astounding. And we managed to get him to speak at our church in October as part of our Reformation series. And we were sitting in a group last Sabbath afternoon or sometime over the weekend, and he was there with us, and somebody was saying to me, what's your church like, Rob? So I said, well, it's difficult to describe, you know. But what people want to know is, do we wear suits? Do we face the front? Do we have a pulpit? Do we have a platform party? And I don't go that way. And so I turned to Daniel and I said, how did you find our church when you visited 2 or 3 weeks ago? Warm, open and friendly. Yes. I think the last area that I will talk to is probably one of the most difficult areas to think about. And that is, I've got four words here, and they paint a picture. Forgiveness, forbearance, patience, and long-suffering. How are we going to live together? How are we going to thrive together? How are we going to build a community that glorifies God if we can't put up with each other? Forgiveness, forbearance, patience, long suffering. Somebody like to read it for me? I haven't got it on my screen. Ephesians 4. Somebody like to read Ephesians 4, 2, and then somebody else like to read Ephesians 4, verse 32.
Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love.
Thank you. Humble and gentle and patient. Verse 32 of chapter 4.
Instead, be kind to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God through Christ.
I like that word, tender-hearted. You know, sometimes in my work environment, people say to me that I'm not strong enough, I'm not decisive enough, I'm not cutting enough. All these wonderful corporate words that some of us have to live with. Well, all I will say is amen to that. I don't want to be known as somebody that lives like that. I want to be known as somebody who is tender-hearted, patient, forgives, and most of all, long-suffering. May God bless us. Thank you.